Welcome back. I'm Jesse Baines with Yahoo Finance Canada. You're watching Editor's Edition. And today we're talking real estate during COVID-19. We're going to talk about the path of mortgage rates. We're going to get to your viewer questions, all that and more with Realosophy Realty's John Pasalis in Toronto. Hey, John, thanks for being here.
Hello again.
And we have Oakwin Realty's Steve Suretsky in Vancouver. Thanks for being here, Steve.
Should be another fun one. Let's do it.
Okay, let's start with the local markets, starting with the GTA, John. I know last month we talked prices were starting to creep up again. How are things looking right now?
Yeah, I mean, so when we look at the low-rise market, it's a bit unbelievable, but prices continue to increase. I mean, for most of the year, low-rise home prices had leveled off at around $1.3 million average price. They went up to 1.4 in September, 1.45 in October. So they just keep inching up a little bit. Condos are not going up as rapidly. They've gone up a little bit, but it's definitely a more balanced market when we're looking at the condo segment.
Balanced market, does that mean that first-time buyers should be looking at the condo market to get a foot in the door or not?
Yeah, I mean, the challenge with the condo market for first-time buyers, I mean, is if you're fine with, you know, a smaller unit, if you need like a family-sized condo that's 1,200 square feet, it's actually cheaper to buy a house. You know, when we look at the price per square foot for condominiums, it actually ends up being significantly more expensive to buy a condo. So, you know, condos are an option if your budget's 800,000 as a first-time buyer for sure. It's probably your only option if you want to be in the city.
Right. Would you, I like to put you on the spot and use labels. Is the Toronto market currently a bubble?
I don't know if I'd call it that. I mean, it's a bit of a technical question. I mean, prices are high. There's obviously risks. You know, but bubbles are really periods when prices are rising, largely because of speculative demand, a lot of investor demand. And most of the price growth we've seen over the past year has been driven by end users, which is why it's hard to kind of call this a bubble, even though we saw rapid price growth. But it starts getting a little bit gray when we look at 2021, because most of the surge in demand in 2021 is investor driven. It's obviously just hard to draw a line and say, okay, this is a rational market or fundamental market. This is a bubble. But we're starting to see more red flags, I'd say, in 2021 for sure.
Okay, Steve, how is Vancouver looking?
Yeah, somewhat similar to John there in Toronto, but basically, you know, if you're looking for a detached house, it hasn't gotten any easier. It's actually probably gotten harder. You know, inventory continues to slide lower. We're seeing lots of bidding wars still at the entry-level single-family house. I think it's just a market that continues to be plagued by, you know, just not enough listings coming to market. There's a lot of buyers that are trying to sort of close transactions before the end of the year, and they're really just competing over sort of the scraps that are kind of trickling in. So that's kind of a continued problem. I feel like prices in that segment over the last 6 weeks appear to have inched even higher. And then on the flip side, you know, in the condo market, it's kind of a mixed story. I mean, we've got, if you look at the data, you know, record condo sales in the month of October, so all time record highs. But I feel like most of that strength, most of that growth is actually happening in the suburbs. So the downtown condo market, for example, is, you know, still relatively flat. I mean, it's just not a whole lot going on. It's kind of hit or miss. But, you know, if you're going out to the suburbs looking for a condo, it's fairly competitive. Prices are definitely going up quite a bit in the suburbs. And it seems to be reaching a point that, you know, people are almost paying somewhat similar prices for condos in the suburbs as like the downtown Vancouver market. So I think that's a bit of a distortion that I'm kind of curious to see if that reverses at some point in the future here.
So that difference between suburban condos and downtown condos, is that just a case of those suburban condos playing catch up with the downtown one? Or is that just a matter of, you know, still people, a lot of them are working from home, not planning to return to their downtown offices, or maybe a combination?
Yeah, I think it's more or less just a pandemic driven event that, you know, people are feeling they don't have to be so close to the city core. I mean, obviously, I think downtown Vancouver is dealing with a lot of problems in terms of, you know, increased, you know, crime and whatnot. So I think that, you know, it's people seem to be sort of fleeing that downtown core and going into the suburbs. But like I said, you know, there used to be a pretty big spread between, you know, inner city, downtown Vancouver condo prices and like what you'd pay in the suburbs. But to me, that gap is extremely narrow right now. So to me, it's kind of like what's the risk reward here, you know, of a suburban condo where there's a lot more room to expand and add supply. So I think that's kind of a distortion in the market right now.
Okay, speaking of distortions in the market, there's this perception that flippers and investors are driving things a lot in Vancouver. Steve, do you have an estimate of how much of the market investors and flippers? I guess investor and flippers are the same thing, but I think you get my point. Steve?
Yeah, I know. I just posted this chart on Twitter there, but you know, if we look at home flips, so home is being flipped as a percentage of the total sales, it just ticked higher slightly. So as of the end of October, property flips make up about 5% of total transactions, which, you know, from a historical perspective, if you go back and look at any other previous housing boom, you know, 2006, 2007, or 2016, 2017, I mean, that number was getting closer to 8, 9, 10%. So, you know, at 5%, it's actually historically quite low. So property flipping hasn't really been driving the market in this bull cycle. Now, don't get me wrong, I think as prices continue to increase here, or should they continue to increase, I think you will continue to see more and more flipping activity.
Interesting. How about in the GTA, John? How does it look compared to past cycles?
Yes, I mean, so flipping is not a primary driver in our market. I mean, similar to Vancouver, it's a pretty small share, and most of those are people who are building homes or renovating. But certainly investors are a big driver in the market. You know, Terranet, that manages sort of the land registry in Ontario, released a report last month that showed that 30% of home purchases in the GTA are basically bought by investors. And that's like the highest share of any buyer segment. So there are more investors than there are first-time buyers, than there are upsizers or downsizers. So, you know, they're a really dominant driver, I'd say, in the housing market, and largely driving a lot of the growth in sales in 2021 is driven by investors this year.
All right, thank you for that update. And we got an update on where rates may be headed from the Bank of Canada Governor Tiff Macklem. Have a listen.
We took an important step today. We ended quantitative easing. We've also, as I just mentioned, indicated that in our new forecast, we now expect slack to be absorbed sooner. And, you know, that signals that we will be considering raising interest rates sooner than we previously thought. So interest rates don't need to be as low for as long to get that full recovery and get inflation.
Okay, now that timeline has been moved up significantly since the pandemic started and the overnight rate was slashed. You know, some Scotia famously called for 8 rate hikes. I guess my first question is, do we believe them, John? Can we expect rates to go up meaningfully?
Well, I mean, I think, yeah, I think we should expect rates to go up in the new year. I mean, I think it's hard to predict, obviously, how many rate hikes we're going to see, you know. But at the end of the day, the Bank of Canada's mandate is keeping inflation under control, and if they see signs that it's just going to keep ticking up, I mean, that's what they need to kind of focus on. And I think it's going to be really interesting because, you know, obviously raising rates is going to put some pressure on households. Obviously, their debt payments are going to increase. Their carrying costs are going to increase. So that's going to put some pressure on the housing market. And we'll have to just see, obviously, how the Bank of Canada responds to that. But technically, if they see inflation in the future, yeah, I think we expect to see some rate increases next year.
And what happens to variable rate mortgage holders who are dealing with the challenges of inflation, the cost of things that they need, food, gas, heat, all this kind of stuff is going up. And at the same time, their mortgage rate goes up. So it's a bit of a double whammy because, the overnight rate is raised to tackle inflation. But so now it's a bit of a double whammy. What does that do to households, John?
So, I mean, I think it depends on how someone set up their variable rate mortgage, because you can basically have it set up so that your mortgage payment increases as rates increase, or you could set it up so that you have a fixed mortgage payment. And as interest rates increase, then less of your payment is going towards your principal, more of your payment is going towards your interest, right? So, you know, for some households, it's going to depend how they have it set up. But a lot of households that they have, for example, debt on their HELOCs, on their home equity line of credit, well, that's going to go up. They can't manage that the way you can a mortgage payment. So definitely carrying costs are going to go up and debt servicing costs are going to be increasing.
That's an excellent point about the different ways that setting up a variable mortgage rate. And that's why we have you guys here, because I actually didn't know that. I did know that. Maybe I forgot. Anyways, who knows what goes on in my brain. Steve, what do you think? Can Canada's economy, Canada's households, considering our massive debt burden globally, actually, but Canada in particular, can we handle higher rates, meaningfully higher rates?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was just getting dunked on this for Twitter. I think there's a misconception that, you know, when I say I feel like rates can't really go up, it's not that I don't want them to go up. It's just I'm skeptical that our sort of, you know, economy can actually withstand that, or a housing market can withstand that. I feel like the central banks, you know, you just remember like Tiff Macklem at the onset of the pandemic saying, hey, you know, we're not going to raise rates till at least sometime at the end of 2023, go out and borrow money, please take as much as you can. And, you know, talk about the ultimate rug pull. I mean, here we are early 2022, and we're going to start to see a whole bunch of rate hikes. If Scotiabank is right, God help us all, 8 rate hikes. I mean, that would be the ultimate rug pull, I think, from the Bank of Canada there. But I think they're really stuck in between a rock and a hard place, because you've got, you know, inflation clearly running, you know, hot. I don't think it's really transitory like they say it is. And so, yeah, they want to hike rates, but like, I'm skeptical that, you know, the Bank of Canada is also coming out and saying, oh, we're lowering our GDP forecast for 2022. So it's like, you're kind of like hiking rates into the slowing economy to fight inflation, but the inflation is largely supply chain related. Like, anyways, long story short is I'm skeptical that the housing market, I think you get a couple rate hikes in for sure. And I think we'll see housing probably start to slow down as a result. And I think that the optimistic forecast for how many rate hikes we're going to be able to sneak in, I think we'll probably have an accident before that happens.
Right. The most recent GDP print actually came in below the Bank of Canada's most recent forecast. So that's just another thing to consider. But John, are you finding that buyers are kind of wanting to, you know, get into the market now before rates do meaningfully go up? Are you seeing any that kind of pattern in the GTA?
You know, I've seen a lot of agents tweet that, and quite frankly, we're not seeing it on the ground. And I mean, quite frankly, it doesn't even make sense to me, because 5-year rates are already up. So you kind of missed the boat on that. And if you're trying to get ahead of the Bank of Canada's increases, I mean, that doesn't make sense either, because if you're just getting a variable rate, your rate's going up regardless. So it doesn't really make sense, this idea that people are trying to rush in ahead of the Bank of Canada's rate increases, because if you're going variable, you're going to be eating those higher rates in the future. So I don't see that happening. We don't see that on the ground very much.
Are you seeing any of that type of activity on the ground in the Vancouver area, Steve?
No, it's funny though, because I did get asked that this morning just before this interview, but a reporter reached out to me, asked if I was seeing that. And I said the same thing. I replied back in the email. I said, no, I'm not seeing that. But it is kind of funny, because I do remember, pre-mortgage stress test in 2017, there was a whole bunch of people like rushing to beat the mortgage stress test, only obviously to see a correction in home prices soon after. As of right now, a feet on the ground, I'm not seeing that. Would it surprise me? Not really, but yeah, I mean, for any buyer that's potentially watching this, it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense, in my opinion, to try to beat out, you know, higher rates, because I think ultimately higher rates will translate into a housing slowdown, maybe not a correction in prices, but I think it will slow the market for sure.
Okay, now let's talk about this potential slowdown, Steve. We're going to take a look at the five-year bond, Government of Canada bond yields. Let's take a look at this chart. We're going to start specifically at the end there. We see, and we're not going to ignore the rest of this chart, don't worry, but let's just start with the end. We see a surge from the COVID lows. We're seeing banks, big banks, already raising their fixed mortgage rates. Is this a sign that housing market is ready for a slowdown, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something worth watching. Like, I think ultimately, like, everybody's well aware of how much, like, leverage and debt we have, you know, in the Canadian housing market. So I think, like, particularly in Vancouver and Toronto, those are two pretty levered housing markets that, in my opinion, are extremely sensitive to interest rate increases. You know, I always get a lot of pushback that, oh, you know, five-year mortgages are only at 2.5. Who cares if they go to 3? Well, I always remind people that, and John, correct me if I'm wrong here, but at least in Vancouver, you know, when mortgage rates in 2018 hit 3.5%, the housing market slowed and prices came off 5 to 10%. So,
okay, let's bring that chart back. Let's bring that chart back, and then we can verify. So there we go. We see in 2018, I guess, rates meaningfully going up at the end of 2017. Were prices falling then, Steve or John?
I mean, in greater Vancouver, the prices were coming off. There was definitely a soft housing market in 2018. So I don't know what it was in Toronto, John, but
yeah, go ahead, John.
Toronto's very similar. I'd say Toronto's also a very calm balance. I mean, prices weren't necessarily, I mean, they weren't falling in 2018, but it was not a competitive market. It's a very slow market.
Mm. So this could be, you know, an indicator that we can watch for and maybe come to some sort of conclusions about what we might expect to see, right, John?
Yeah, I mean, 100%.
Nothing's perfect, of course,
and the last time, I mean, I remember the Bank of Canada was increasing rates. I mean, I remember even clients of ours or past clients of ours talking about how they're noticing it in their monthly finances. You know, their HELOC payments are going up or their variable rates going up. So, you know, it's going to impact not just new purchasers, but I mean, to your earlier question, it can definitely have an impact on households' finances. So yeah, it's probably going to take some heat out of the market for sure.
Okay. And
can I just add to that for a sec?
Yes.
In 2018, we had, so in 2018, just for everybody's quick understanding here, in 2018, annual home sales in Greater Vancouver were the lowest they'd ever been in 18 years. The lowest. So 2018 was the lowest number of home sales for the entire year, as the last time they were that low was in the year 2000. So if that's any sort of idea, in my opinion, of how sensitive Vancouver housing market is to rates, I think that's a decent indicator anyways.
Very interesting. And during the election, we saw that all of the parties were quite sensitive to this that housing affordability has eroded to a point where there's concern and people want government to do something about it. There were a lot of promises made, but we haven't seen any action yet, but there's a new cabinet position. Ahmed Hussein is the new Minister of Housing, as well as Diversity and Inclusion, but we didn't have a Minister of Housing before. Is that a sign that that the federal Liberals are really taking this seriously and that we're going to see some action on the housing front, John?
I mean, I think it's positive that we have a Minister of Housing. It's a bit surprising that we haven't had one up until this time, given what a significant impact that obviously has on our economy. But I'm not optimistic that the Liberals are going to do very much. I mean, if you looked at their platform, most of their policies were really to drive more demand, quite frankly. So anyone who's looking for more affordable housing, I mean,
the only way that happens is if prices fall or incomes rise much faster than house prices. And I don't see either happening anytime soon.
Okay, Steve, what's your take?
I think he'll do about as well as the minister of the middle class. So, you know,
rest
he probably
peace.
Won't last very long. Rest in peace. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's well-intentioned. But I commented on it earlier. I don't think, he doesn't have any experience in the real estate space. I think it's just, there's so many, it's a multifaceted problem. We've talked about it before. But, I think if people are looking for like corrections in the housing market or more affordability, I don't think it's going to come from the housing minister there. I think it'll probably come from, interest rates here shooting higher and, softening up the housing market is my view. But
well, maybe Vancouver Grenville MP Talib Nur Muhammad might have been a better choice considering his experience level in
clear-cut winner right there.
Yeah, that would have been an interesting choice in terms of PR for the Liberal Party. Okay, I want to now take a look at another chart. This one is from CIBC. Benny Tao came up with a report showing how much parents are giving to their kids. And I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on the market. And look at that. As prices go up, those gifts get bigger. When you are dealing with clients, are you finding, I don't know if they reveal this necessarily to you guys when they're making a purchase or looking, but is gift money a big factor for buyers getting into the market? And even move-up buyers, based on his report, are getting money from their parents. What are you seeing, John, on that front?
So, I mean, it's always been a factor for first-time buyers. I mean, 10 years ago, the gifts would be 40,000-50,000, and now they're well over 100,000, as noted in that report. I think he said the average in the GTA was 130,000. But the trend that I've seen more of in the past 4 years or so is parents helping move up buyers, which I think is in some ways an even more interesting trend, because these are buyers who already have a home, who have benefited from the capital appreciation in their home, have capital and equity. But still need that extra bit of help to kind of move up to that next home. And I think the average gift to move up buyers is $200,000. So, and so these are not first-time buyers. These are generally families. And this is what it takes to, move in Toronto's housing market. And really what's driving prices, it's not just, foreign money. It's not just these, a lot of it is this intergenerational wealth that's flowing down to kids, for sure, is a big factor.
Okay, only got about 10 seconds left in this segment before we move on to questions. Steve, are you seeing gift money being a big factor in Vancouver?
Yeah, it's huge. It's everything. I think CIBC said it was only 25% of first-time homebuyers get gifts. In my experience personally, it's probably about 90%.
Interesting. Okay, be kind to your parents if you want to get into the Canadian housing market, because they may be your biggest lifeline. Forget the Bank of Canada. Thank you, mom and dad, biggest stimulus provided possibly for you. Okay, now let's move on to viewer questions. We're going to start with R.W. Smith. We've condensed this a bit, but so he finds himself in a situation. He says, R.W. Smith says, I signed a representation contract with a realtor for one property, so I thought. The representation agreement stated the address and the area, so I signed. My bid was not successful, and then I relooked at the representation agreement the next day and noticed that it was, well, vague enough. That made me a bit worried about what I signed. And he goes on to say, also on the next page, the legal jargon stated for an additional 80 days after the expiry date stated, I don't know if that's a typo, but I called the realtor the next day to reconfirm what I asked for is what I got and did not get any response back from her. Is there anything I can do to have this clarified or nullified, if in fact what I fear is a fast one pulled on me? So now he also sent an image of the what he signed. There it is, blacked out. So what do you have to say, John, about the situation that R.W. Smith finds himself in, or her?
So it's hard to say concretely without knowing all the details what they found vague, but generally they're talking about a buyer representation agreement. So if it was fined for a specific property, it applies to that property. The 180 days is something called a holdover, which generally means that if this person wanted to buy that home within 180 days, they'd have to use that realtor as well. So, you know, I guess their concerns really depend on what they are and what the vague issues are. But generally, it sounds like from what they said, that it applies to that home, but they would have to work with that realtor if they buy it within 6 months as well.
Thanks. So let's move on to Frank Winkler. Frank asks, are there any regulations now in place to limit, prevent foreign investment speculation as found in the overheated realty market? And if not, are there any indications that the federal government might finally get around to limiting such foreign speculators before most Canadians are literally driven out of the housing market? So this is a common sense of frustration that a lot of people feel, that foreign money has made housing unaffordable and not going to happen in their lifetimes. Steve, what is the, remind us what the foreign buyers tax is in Vancouver. And I know the federal one, there's a federal one that was promised in the election as well.
Yeah, in BC, we have a 20% foreign buyers tax. Basically, if you're not a Canadian citizen or permanent resident, basically this tax would apply to you. I think that if I look at the most recent BC government property transfer tax data, foreign buyers made up 1% of all purchases, 1.2% of all purchases as of August of 2021. So they're not really being captured by the tax. I mean, I think ultimately it's a lot of the foreign investments, quote unquote, is Canadian citizens or permanent residents that are ultimately earning incomes offshore, that are, deploying capital here as sort of a safe haven or to have their kids go to school here and stuff like that. So in my opinion, no, I don't think anything's going to change. I think that it's very difficult to target capital flows. We've tried to obviously target them through from a nationality perspective. And as we clearly see, 1% of the market, it's not making any change.
Okay. Let's move on to Patrick O'Neill. Patrick asks, okay, this is putting you guys on the spot a little bit. I don't understand why you would ask real estate agents about where real estate prices are going. They've been driving up prices for years. Don't shoot the messenger here. Because they control both sides of the transaction, working for both buyers and sellers, and they work on commission. Thus, it is their benefit to keep prices high. And that is why most real estate agents are very wealthy despite doing a very low-skill job. ouch, that was pretty harsh. I think people blame realtors almost as much as foreign buyers for the way house prices have gone. John, what would you say to Patrick here?
I mean, yeah, it's a common thing we hear. I mean, what I'd say is I think it depends on who you're listening to. I mean, the funny thing about that is I'd say probably myself and Steve are on here, I mean, often get criticized from people for being too bearish and pessimistic sometimes about the market, which is kind of the opposite of what Patrick's talking about. So I think he's right. I mean, it depends on the realtor. I mean, the funny thing is in our industry, there are a lot of people who are just always bullish. I think Steve and I tend to be a little bit more balanced, which is probably why we're on your show. But I think it depends on, you want to kind of look at everyone's advice and kind of what they're saying about the market more so than just the things they're forecasting or predicting.
Okay. And Steve, I'm going to give you a chance to respond to Patrick as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think like I've been called, as John said, I've been called a perma bear, a doom and gloom guy. And now, when I flip bullish, 12 months ago, I was called a shill. So I feel like there's always the criticism. I understand that, people are always looking for someone to point the finger at in terms of rising house prices. I think they see, realtors driving around in the BMW, that they must be the responsible party for it. But I think it's ultimately I think it's a larger systemic problem. I think that my biggest thing is focusing on credit flows and, who's creating the money and how much we're pumping out. So I think that's probably a larger influence than individual real estate agents, but you know, to each their own, everyone's entitled to their opinion.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to Alex Lee. This one's for John. Alex asks, how do buyers of pre-construction condo townhomes know the developer is legitimate, has a good reputation and track record? I'm looking to purchase a pre-construction condo in the GTA, and all I do is look on their website and Google around. Of course, when I look at their website, they'll only show how amazing and glamorous they are. So is there a third-party website that is unbiased, has an unbiased review or ranking of the builders? That's a good question, John.
You know, that's a great question. I mean, you definitely want to go to websites. I mean, BuzzBuzz Home is a great one that has a lot of data on builders. And what you're looking for is, of course, you know, the track record and history of them, how many units they built, how many buildings they built, because there are a lot of builders out there who just, I mean, it's their first project that they're launching. So, you know, you want to do some research to understand who they are. Do they have a history of completing, and how many condos have they canceled? And I think that's actually one that's tends to can be a little bit hard to get data on. But you know, I think online websites, you know, like BuzzBuzz Home are probably a good source to get some research on some of the builders that are out there right now.
All right. Very good. Lots of great information. I hope that helps anybody out there thinking about buying or selling a home and what to do next. And I'm going to end it here. And thank you, Steve Suretsky of Oakland Realty. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And John Pasalis of Realosophy Realty. Thanks for being here, John.
Thanks again.
And thank you, everybody, for watching. Do check out John and Steve on Twitter. They tweet out all kinds of great charts and stats and information about the housing market and sometimes make controversial calls that get them into trouble from time to time. And meanwhile, do check back on Yahoo Finance Canada for all your news on real estate, the stock market, cryptocurrencies, and a whole bunch more. Thank you. See you next time.